who you are by where you are. Mumbai's location politics. My Mumbai explorations have been mostly alone. I didn't know anybody else who was as intrigued by Mumbai's neighborhoods, subcultures, architecture or streets. Neither of my parents is from here, and I grew up surrounded by those more focused on gender roles than city explorations. Womanhood was presented as delicate fussiness about sweat, dust and crowd. Masculinity was performed as policing of female bodies into this box. City excursions did not fall anywhere in this system. Happily, I grew up in a place that made it possible to explore alone. And perhaps this is an ongoing journey of my identity, so it's best done solo. What does it mean to be a Mumbaikar, or for Mumbai to be Mumbai? Public transport and social class divides. I love public transport. It tells you so much about a city, how it is governed, how its society divides itself, who it gives what access to, and how it manages the most fundamental of its identity, its people. And it tells you about the people, where, how, and when they choose to move around in their home grounds. Unlike in other cities, the majority of Mumbai citizens are workers, including homemakers. Historically, we have had to commute across a linear city to have a truly metropolitan life. The caste system of this city for decades had to do with the suburbs being inferior to town. Suburban Mumbaikar lives were shaped by struggles to access even basic urban amenities like a movie theatre or bookshops. These would involve long and complicated journeys. The sense was that we were poor or verni or low-class people who didn't deserve easy access, and that the struggle was the price to pay for having big dreams. It's very Indian to gatekeep people's aspirations. I visited South Bombay recently and I was struck by how rudimentary, irrelevant and, well, dead everything is. While parading some yesteryear glory about colonial era British architecture or nostalgia about Parsi food. The more north you proceed, the taller and newer the buildings get. Admittedly, I'm biased. There is a grim sort of glee in seeing the condescending fall. Mumbaikars of my generation and class are native to the internet, have seen other cities in the world, and we think of ourselves as global citizens. So we compare the design, pricing, etc. with those places. We are resentful that Mumbai was the last of the Indian cities to get a functional metro system, despite being the country's cash cow, its most populous city, and needing it the most from a logistical standpoint. From benevolent Bombay to mean Mumbai. At the same time, Mumbai is made of waves of immigrants. This entire city doesn't belong to my class or even generation of people. Should I be gatekeeping cultural influences and behaviors any more than the sobo elite did for decades? Mumbai, as opposed to Bombay pre-90s, is angry, a bit brutish, and not really that cool. At middle age, I feel the effort it takes to adapt, even as I still have the ability to do so. The auto rickshaw network is pretty overwhelmingly dominated by North Indian male immigrants, often without families in the same city and still identifying with the gender class systems of their native cultures. This distinction may only be visible to a specific slice of Mumbai's citizenry, those who can afford to be passengers, who can choose public transport over vehicle ownership, and women in particular. I sit in a higher socio-economic class in Mumbai, but my gender, and I suspect my darker skin, place me at an inferior class to these men in their native cultures. This is an example of the unspoken social conflict that defines the interactions of commute in this city. There was a time when Mumbai cabs were considered a symbol of safety. The vehicles would be gleaming, their drivers smart in their uniforms, always running on meter and with an extra brand of silent solicitousness if you were pregnant, ailing, disabled, elderly, underage or female. Uber and Ola cabs tend to be glossier vehicles on an average today. Their drivers are not necessarily better workers or people for that matter, but they have smarter phones, glossier screens and may speak English. An occasional older driver may have upgraded after years of driving a Kali Pili, but the majority of them are young. And it shows in the way they navigate the city's roads as well as the human interactions. They do not inspire the same trust in me now.
The black-yellow cabs, on the other hand, haven't all kept up either. The drivers, like their vehicles, feel a bit left behind, and the deep-seated bitterness sometimes leaks through. The city is not hard-working and peaceful anymore. It's hungry, greedy, and very angry. How the metro is changing the social fabric of Mumbai. There are still those who see the metro as an extension of the railway. People for whom track travel falls well beneath their class and very likely have never set foot in a Mumbai station of any kind. Then there are those who see it as an unsatisfactory compromise. They have moved to Mumbai as adults in search of a better life. This usually means more luxury associated with car travel, not the class blurring of going through turnstiles, buying tickets and traveling with 1,000 others. These would be the people who sat in cars running their ACs during the 2005 floods while the rest of the city trudged past on foot. I know many other native Mumbaikars who would rather brave bad roads and nightmare traffic than set foot in a metro. They do not feel as invested in the social fabric of our home city as I do. Perhaps for many, life becomes a quest for upward mobility defined by wealth and luxury. For non-native Mumbaikars, the metro is just another mode of transport, not an integral part of the city's fabric. I've spent a considerable part of my life getting around in this city and becoming invested in it as part of my identity. Thus, I cannot relate to either group of people. Native Mumbaikars who moved abroad come home with odd displacements and perspectives. An NRI friend grew up in Borivali, which had even less social value than Marol, and now lives in Canada. He mentally contrasted the Mumbaikar life of the 90s with now and also with city dwellers everywhere else in the world. It was joyful glee for him. When he said goodbye, he also gently let me know there wouldn't be a lot of contact because he had a busy life elsewhere. Maybe it's easier to objectively rejoice in the city when you don't consider yourself a part of it anymore. I only noticed it in contrast with another NRI friend who struggles with wanting to still identify as Mumbaikar while internalizing the racism of his adopted homeland. Both stories feel sad in different ways. Kalaghoda Art Festival, Sobo to a Suburban Mumbaikar. I brought my family to the Kalaghoda Art Festival when it first began. I read about it in the newspaper and then I overran my father's exhausted objections over a commute to South Bombay. At the time, I took the name literally, and I assumed that art was only paintings in galleries. I was thrilled to discover that I was allowed to enter the museums and also to find art on the pavements, accessible. A family friend asked me what I thought, and I said, "I don't understand what this is supposed to mean." And he said, "Art can simply have aesthetic value too, and that's okay." I was studying science at that time, and had I not received this insight, I might have been trapped in the regimented, hierarchical thinking of a science education. A few years later, I discovered the literary events. And in my first flush of defiant adulthood, I haunted the festival on weekend mornings, prowling every workshop, panel discussion and book launch that I could find. I was so scared of the literary, artsy people, and they would realize I was an unartistic science business type. At one workshop, Roshal Potkar introduced me to Cafe Rati. And later, I saw Manisha Lakhe on stage. My first encounter with unapologetic, badass womanhood. I attended a book launch and discovered that the author was my age and, like me, had a full career outside writing. These women embodied roles that I had never seen before. In the years to come, I would watch them navigate the same mundane, grinding suburban lives as myself. But a corner of my mind would know the something special, the colorful imagination, the wondrous appreciation for history and beauty, the sheer art in these everyday faces in the crowd. I learned to craft my identity from these scraps of belonging. Who am I? Andheri dweller who prefers the page to the screen. Intrepid train traveler who finds poetry in broken mill windows. Corporate slave with pencil sketches in her office diary. As with everything else in this city, the art, literary, festival action has moved northward and become shinier, harder, costlier. There are countless other events within the city. I became a name on the spoken word circuit. I founded and ran a popular community of my own. I've done the dance. I belong. I also got to chronicle the Kalagoda Art Festival on its official blog 1 year and was paid for it. My first ever writing gig. And another fine year, I saw my name appear on the program as one of the speakers in a literary workshop. It has been a big journey. Yet, it's so complicated for me to find this sense of belonging in South Bombay. The festival got harder and harder to get into. The commute was grueling, the events became more commercial, and the people thronged, making it more fashionable and less authentic. I've had wry realizations about art and creating. All of us are insecure and needy. Musicians are all, "I'm the greatest, kiss my feet." Painters are, "I am mysterious and my personality is to confuse you." Actors are, "I am everybody and nobody, so please tell me who I am." And writers are, "I will be whoever you want me to be because I am a figment of imagination." Me. Kalagoda Art Festival 2025, a full circle. This year, after losing or letting go of everything that was me, I went back on the Kalagoda Art Festival's silver anniversary. Family health issues stymied 2 attempts to visit. Suburban mundanities are the central conflicts of my life. I wasn't allowed into one event because sobo Brahminism continues. But I found sweet comfort in a solo trip midweek in a sparsely occupied David Sassoon library talk. It made me remember writing. That moment pointed to me and said, "You are a writer. Have you forgotten?" This year's festival feels like the close of a chapter, one in a much longer book. I returned after a long distance in my mind. Everything was familiar, from the mismanagement / rudeness of the event I wasn't allowed into, to the surprise familiarity in bookshops, from the instincts telling me which lanes and events to avoid, guiding me to places of reflection in the noise, to the sudden intimacies and worlds of words. As if to ensure that I got it, it ended on an alignment of gender and history at the Murder, She Wrote event. Cities constantly change. As human beings, we don't change at the same pace or even in the same directions. Identity becomes a jerky ride on rough terrain, not unfamiliar to anyone from Andheri. We are always going to be beset by oppressive social class structures, especially in a culture like India. The interesting thing about cities is the gaping holes that show up in social fabric, through which you might blossom or rip apart. Mumbai historically has allowed for a near complete erasure of identity. The city has been stagnating and choking for years. I have complicated feelings about the sudden galvanization of road laying, metro building, station inaugurations and flyover building. They are long overdue reprieves in the city. But they are driven by forces and agenda that I may not align with. I may not have a choice though. When the wave comes, we are all washed away or embedded. Maybe that's the only thing an island city dweller can hold on to.